This is Don Hassig with Cancer New York, and we are having a teleconference this morning. Several members of our group, we are speaking with New York State Assembly member Deirdre Scozafava. She represents part of the North Country of New York State that includes St. Lawrence County, where we all in Cancer Action reside. So I'm going to start off by asking the people on the call to introduce themselves.
I guess I'll go first then. My name's Michelle Reed. I've lived here since 2002. And I lived here before that in 1992. And I'm originally from Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. I love it here. I'm 52 years old, and I am a cancer victim.
I'm Lou Shepherd, and I moved here in 1994. My wife died of cancer about 4 years ago, and I met Michelle at the Cancer Center in Ogdensburg, and I'm a member of Cancer Action and have been working with Don about 10 years. Okay?
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm Don Hassig. Like Lou said, we started Cancer Action in January 2000, and our group is all about using science to prevent cancer, and we're very focused on the part of the cancer causation which is imposed by exposure to pollutant carcinogens.
And I'm Deirdre Scozafava in the New York State Assembly.
I'm Dale Burge, as a member of her staff.
Nice to have you with us.
Well, this discussion that we're having this morning, it is on how our organization, you know, a grassroots environmental cancer prevention group, can work together with state government to progress toward reducing cancer incidence in New York State, and in particular here in the St. Lawrence River Valley and upstate New York, the North Country part of New York State. And so my greatest interest in what we can discuss this morning is how can the New York State Department of Health become more engaged in this particular part of cancer prevention? Because I'm very well aware of the, you know, the considerable energies and efforts that New York State Department of Health puts into the cigarette smoking abatement part of cancer prevention. And certainly that's a good example of what can be done on starting to use the knowledge that exists now around pollutant carcinogens like dioxins and, say, benzene and formaldehyde, some of these other cancer causers in addition to cigarette smoking, that there's a good quantity of science that exists and that there are these clear public education messages in the science. And so we're just hoping that by talking with you, Deirdre, that we can just move forward with having the New York State Department of Health dealing with these issues together with us, so it just feels more like teamwork.
It is very scary. I will say over the last 2 years, I've lost 12 good friends to cancer here in this area, and I have four more now that are, you know, terminally ill that I'm going to be losing within the next couple of months, I'm sure, and it's a death sentence. I mean, to most people, you know, once you have cancer, you may be in a remission for a little while, but sometimes that cancer comes back. It may come back somewhere else, and it really is the same cancer that you were, you know, treated for in the very beginning. And what I went through to be here today, you know, I'm grateful for the chemo and the doctors that treated me down there at the Richard Winter Cancer Center with the radiation and two different types of chemos. And but I suffer from the consequences of those chemos to this day. And I always have that fear when I go for an MRI or a CAT scan. You know, what are they going to find? And I know it's been 5 years this August, and my fiance has lost a lung to cancer. It started out to be just a lobectomy to remove a tumor. It was supposed to be early stage, and it was, but where it was located, to basically ensure that he may have a good chance of surviving, they had to take the whole lung. So it is extremely frightening to know that there's so much going on out here. After I was diagnosed, I really, and my fiance, I really looked around when I lost all these friends one by one to various different types of cancer. And some of the things that go on here, talking to the people, it really amazes me. I mean, our state and our town spray those pesticides, herbicides or whatever, along the roadways, you know, and along the waterways to kill the grass and the weeds from around the guide rails. And that goes into our waterways. It goes into possibly people's wells. And then you have these other idiots out there that bury garbage and debris in the ground. And we have our DEC saying, well, that's okay. There's no law saying they can't. Well, I'll be darned if I would want to buy a nice piece of property thinking this is great. And eventually on down the road, I may want to put in an in-ground pool. And I'm digging up all this garbage in there. And here it's not that far from the well. And I wonder, and I really truly believe that's why there is so many people ill here, because of, you know, what has been going on here for so long. I was told this by my oncologist in Ogdensburg that this has been an ongoing problem. And specifically Dr. Alston told me that the reason she came here from Pittsburgh was because when she had the chance to come here and reside and practice here in Ogdensburg, she was amazed by the counts of cancer victims here. And she couldn't believe it because it was such a rural area. And she wondered, what on earth is going on here? Then, and there's just a lot of different types of cancer that ordinarily, you wouldn't see in a rural area. And there's a lot of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma here, which is an agricultural type of cancer because of the herbicides, pesticides the farmers used and what was used on the railways years ago. And, there's also, she had treated pancreatic cancers. And if she saw one in her lifetime, she said that would be basically the norm, but she's had six. And that's definitely a lethal cancer. Usually no one survives pancreatic cancer.
What communication has Cancer Action had with the Department of Health, or have any of these medical professionals been in touch with the Department of Health about what they're seeing? Just give me a little background, and then
Dr. Alston said she had, mm-hmm. and she said they work on, and Jerry Shepard, the coordinator down there at the Cancer Center, said that, he compiles data daily on what they see down there, even with Syracuse and other bigger areas, and he said that, it's just astronomical. There's just so much. And Dr. Alston does contact and talk to the health department, but the health department doesn't really want to basically elaborate, right, Don? They don't want to really delve into it.
Let me jump in. What we have done, Dee Dee, is way back in the early days of the group, say 2002, 2003, we started focusing on having this project of moving the Center for Environmental Health, which is part of New York State DOH. We were trying to move them to do an information piece, a public health education piece on these persistent organic pollutants, especially dioxin, and the presence of that. See, we feel like the public education messages should name the chemical that causes cancer, that's being focused on, and then tell people how they get exposed to it and then how they can reduce their exposure to it. So we began this long project of trying to move New York State DOH to produce a public information piece on that subject. And then eventually, as the years went by, we focused more on this one brochure. It is called Reducing Environmental Exposure, the 7 Best Kid-Friendly Practices. And eventually, we have in writing a letter from the Center for Environmental Health where they're saying that eventually, when that particular brochure goes, they use them all up, they exhaust their supply, their inventory, that then they will, not that they will think about it, but that they will put some text into that brochure about these carcinogenic persistent organic pollutants, these POPs, that are in the food supply, so that they would then be taking this initial step on educating about this particular group of pollutants and cancer risk reduction. But see, and then as the years have passed, you know, they made a set promise, and but still nothing happens, and we just keep looking at the science. I have become convinced that this is such an important part of cancer risk reduction, you know, the public having this message, that I feel now that it would be truly not nearly strong enough step to take to just put, say, a paragraph in this brochure that's about all kinds of exposures, all kinds of diseases. You know, the cancer message is too important to just bury it in that document. So I really believe, and I have expressed this position, but I don't know if I've actually put it in writing to DOH, but I really strongly feel at this time that they need to produce a standalone public health education piece that addresses the subject of the cancer-causing persistent organic pollutants that are in the food supply, meaning all the animal fat of the whole country, of the whole world. This is not, you know, this is not an isolated New York State problem. It's not a U.S., United States of America problem. It's a worldwide matter of how these chemicals behave in the environment once they're released.
Do they concur with your scientific findings, Don? Like when you have a discussion with DOH, or I mean...
Nope, here's what they say. They say they consider it to be a significant issue, and they say that they will publish, you know, that information in that one brochure, so they must. But you know, the truth is, it's hard to say certainly, because this is another thing that I would really like to have your help with. There are scientists in the Center for Environmental Health that have some knowledge, I don't know how much, but they have some knowledge of dioxin exposure and this thing, this part of science called risk assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically means how much cancer is caused by how much exposure to a particular chemical. The science has progressed to the point where it's possible to make some kind of, you know, rough estimates of how much cancer is caused by how much dioxin exposure. And for certain other chemicals like benzene and arsenic, there are, and say, nuclear radiation, there are risk assessments that have been done, and they have stood the kind of test of peer review in the scientific literature. And so this is something that, you know, knowledgeable people understand. I've made a written request to speak with this Dr. Thomas Johnson, who's an epidemiologist with the Center for Environmental Health in Albany,
mm-hmm.
part of New York State DOH. And he told me he was not allowed to talk to me, that I had to talk to the Dr. Freed, who was the director of the Center for the Health and Environment. And then Dr. Freed just refused to return phone calls. And so I have never had, well, actually years ago, I had a relatively substantive conversation with this Dr. Nancy Kim, who was one of the former head epidemiologists with New York State Center for DOH Center for Environmental Health. But that was quite some time ago. I was not nearly as, you know, knowledgeable concerning the risk assessment part of all this back in those days. That was probably, I don't know, 2003, quite some time ago. And there's been so much going on and so much science published, and I've just sharpened my abilities to speak to it. I truly have never had a substantive conversation about dioxin exposure, cancer risk, especially this matter of like actually numerical risk assessment, you know, to actually come up with some numbers of how much cancer is caused by how much dioxin exposure. I've never had that opportunity with New York State DOH, and I certainly would love to have it. I've requested it repeatedly.
Okay.
And so,
and it's not just the people, it's even our animals, our pets. I mean, I lost two of my dogs to cancer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you kind of wonder what's the common denominator here.
Yeah, we had a lot of them.
To the veterinarians, I mean, a lot of the cattle are getting cancer. You know, and our pets, our cattle, it's a very, very complex but yet terrifying problem.
And, Don, when you started, you said, you know, that they had kind of zeroed in on tobacco cessation and
that is where the...
But they lost a lot of money this year. I mean, I don't mean lost. They lost a lot of funding in that area. It seemed like that was one of the first areas that a lot of the budget cuts occurred.
With DOH?
with DOH. I mean, that's just one area, you know.
I understand that. There was this budgetary matter. But, you know, we've been talking about this. And Lou and I were at an EMC meeting there in St. Lawrence County, you know, up here at the county courthouse, the Environmental Management Council for St. Lawrence County, the environmental advisors of the St. Lawrence County Legislature. We met with them to talk to them about cancer prevention education and how to get it done, you know, considering the budgetary situation and all of this. It's certainly, you know, important, but it's not the end of the story, because Lou just made this perfect point. He said if people would just talk about these things, the education would take place. And it's true. We wouldn't have to, I do not believe that any additional monies would have to be spent if the people in the Department of Health would start just coming out and doing news conferences about these things. That doesn't cost any extra money. They're salaried people. They're there. They have, you know, time to put in.
I'm going to go back around to you. So you feel they have the verifiable science that they can go out and do? I mean, the basics?
They certainly do. I have provided them so much science over the course of the past 10 years, just many research articles, many government reports. There was a government report published way back in 2003. It was published by the Institute of Medicine. You know, no one would challenge what they would set forth to the public. It was titled, Dioxin and Dioxin-like Compounds in the Food Supply, Strategies to Decrease Exposure. It was a final document. It wasn't a draft. It was a final National Institute of Health publication. And that's like 7 years ago now. And they recommended that girls and women of childbearing age reduce their consumption of animal fat to reduce their dioxin exposure. And see, they didn't even go to the point of deciding about the cancer aspect. They based this entirely upon all of the other, because, see, the cancer matter was a little more complex. They stayed away from that. They looked at dioxin exposure disease outcomes such as type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease, attention deficit disorder, these behavioral deficit disorders. See, there are many other chronic diseases and disorders that are caused by dioxin exposure. And so they limited their, you know, recommendations just to those groups of diseases, and they still felt it was important that girls and women of childbearing age would reduce consumption and exposure thereby because of all those diseases that are caused by the body burden that the woman has when the organism is in gestation and it's being affected by the dioxins in the mother's body and thereby, you know, in the, you know, fetus's environment. And this cancer problem that has become clearer and clearer as the years have passed by, they made their recommendation without even having that added on top. There's an undeniable vast amount of scientific literature that one can base a very strong decision on to educate the public about reducing their dioxin exposure. And the cancer, to me, I believe the cancer science, the dioxin cancer science, is the most important part of that literature. But, you know, other groups, say like a diabetes group or a, you know, cardiac disease group, you know, heart disease group, they would, or a lung disease group, dioxin exposures associated with, you know, lung cancer and lung disease. So, you know, there are other advocates out there that might feel the science is stronger on their particular disease and dioxin exposure. But to me, there's so much cancer, and people are so afraid of it, and they don't like it, and it's such a horrible disease. You know, for all the various aspects of dioxin and cancer, I feel that is the strongest, you know, both from the science and the, you know, the positive result that would result from decreasing the cancer risk from dioxin exposure, that, you know, that should be what drives this education. But, you know, there's certainly a huge amount of science for doing this education.
Like banning the use of animal fat, you went to the in the production of feeds, you went to the FDA for that, right?
Yep.
You petitioned that.
Got nowhere.
And okay. Do you feel there's some movement, though, being made by consumers that are starting to understand what's in the food?
Very little.
I feel there's more of a demand for organic or understanding where your food is coming from. Maybe not to the degree it needs to be.
There's some of that, yep. Yep, there certainly is. like Lou is saying, Lou's always saying, where there is a change, there's this opportunity. And so what we see is that as people are changing their views on these things, there's starting more and more a demand for organic food. And I see signs up along the road now that say, you know, grass-fed beef, you know, all natural. I've seen two signs right here in Salinas County at farms where they say all natural meat or grass-fed meat. So certainly there is a growing public awareness, or they wouldn't put those signs up that, you know, they're mentioning that, because that's truly a significant part of the solution. Dr. David Carpenter with SUNY Albany, he has stated frequently on our calls and in our efforts to educate the media and the policymakers and the public, he has stated that the grass-fed meat has less of a fat content, and it is only the fat that contains these chemicals that we are the most concerned about.
Why do you feel Department of Health needs to be the agency to, I mean, if the education is there and it's kind of
there. It's very small. It's very small compared to what it could be. We could make this huge change in the amount of knowledge that exists in the public if the Department of Health would do their part. Because here's the thing, Didi. Many people in the public, they still will say to me, and I'm talking school board presidents, you know, school superintendents that have a lot to say about how this education transpires. They say to me, we prefer to work with the agencies. And when they say the agencies, they mean the county health department. They mean the New York State Department of Health. Many will fail to, you know, embrace this knowledge, this science, if it comes from environmental groups alone, because people have, you know, certain members of our society, they have this attitude, they have this kind of this perception that the environmentalists are extremists, they were too passionate, and I'm probably responsible for part of their perception of that, because I'm certainly cannot control my passion on these things. But anyways, I'm just trying to make this point that, and it's the mandate. I feel cheated is really the perfect word for it, when the New York State Department of Health won't do part of this educating, because their mandate, I pay taxes here in the county and in New York, and the other people do too, and the New York State Department of Health's mandate is to protect the public health. And when there's all that science there to use to educate how to avoid exposure, that means protecting the health, because if the exposure is avoided, the body burden gradually lessens, so there's less risk, and so the health of the person who heard that message from DOH about reducing their consumption of animal fat because of these carcinogens in the animal fat, that is health protection, you know, at the highest level, and we just wanted them to do their job. And it's so frustrating to see that they don't do it because of, you know, these monetary interests. I am certain, based upon candid, you know, statements made to me by people that work with New York State DOH, based upon talking with other environmental groups, the Breast Cancer Network groups, based upon talking with other people in state government and in, you know, like environmental groups around New York and around the U.S., I'm certain that the problem here is that the New York State Department of Health experiences the influence of corporations that either sell food or make chemicals or are part of agriculture.
Sure,
they're just part of the complex mix of people that make up New York State. And so nobody can tell me that if a commissioner of public health came out with a, say, like a health hazard advisory on animal fat for human or livestock or pet consumption, that they would not feel some amount of resistance to that message, because I've felt it. I felt the resistance, and I'm a little guy, you know, compared to them. What I say doesn't matter anything compared to what they say, you know, in the short run. And so they certainly would get some, you know, pushback, some resistance to that message. And so they just feel like, well, you know, we'd rather not do that. You know, we just don't. They choose not to take these science-based steps because they do not want to deal with the amount of pushback that they perceive would result.
And it's not just corporate pushback. I mean, you can look at those cases with whether it be the outdoor wood furnaces. Yeah,
you're right.
Or the open waste burning, or
exactly.
There's also citizen
mm-hmm.
pushback. It's
exactly.
not just the corporate. And I think in some instances, those issues have not been able to go through legislatively. They've had to be diverted more towards regulatory action by a lot of the agencies because of the, not because so much of the corporate pushback, but it's the citizenry pushback. Which probably goes right back to your point of education, that, you know, sometimes the methods that people use are economical and they're looking at doing things cheaper than really understanding everything that, you know, they're doing. And the impact
so
that it might have.
You know, it's so frustrating to me.
Walmart.
I go
and
Walmart.
I'd like to
jump
here
yep.
in at this point.
Okay.
I recently listened to a interview with a man who is a veterinarian that worked for the Canadian equivalent of the FDA. And in 2004, he was fired along with two of his colleagues because they refused to okay the bovine hormone that Monsanto wanted approved. And in this particular case, why the Canadians do not do any testing on questionable chemicals, whereas the FDA does do that. But one of the things that he pointed out was that if it's a carcinogen, and I don't think there's any doubt what dioxins and these other compounds that we're talking about are carcinogens. If it's a carcinogen, and just all you need in the body of either an animal or man is one molecule of a carcinogen to influence one cell in the body to start this whole process of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So, and another thing that I'd like to say is that people are certainly reluctant to change, but with enough education, and if they're really informed, a certain percentage of them are going to change.
Right.
But not everybody is going to change, for sure.
But
you know, there are the meat and potato people. that's what they eat, and that's what they're going to eat continually. So, you know, and if donuts are your thing, then you're going to eat donuts. But you can tell people all about the health hazards of a whole bunch of things, and they'll keep right on doing the same thing. But I do believe, though, that if part of the governing organizations come out with some real statements that are backed up by science, and you're going to get a percentage of people that are willing to make some changes in their lifestyle. I certainly have.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I find it a rather challenge to do that.
Mm-hmm. And organic, I mean, that's great. I mean, I buy a lot of organic too, but this is such a depressed area due to the economy and other factors that, you know, a lot of these people that are, like, lower income, they could never afford to buy organic. You know, because, you know, it's a little higher, well, it's a lot higher in some cases, some places, than, you know, your average foods.
Right.
Well, this the same man that I listened to his interview, he thinks that he offered some solutions, and he thinks that the growing of food should be a top priority and taught in all of the schools. And also, he says that we ought to turn some of the property that the schools are located on into gardens and make that a program that just keeps working all the time. To teach people how to grow their own food. And one of the predictions he made was that there are, in the next 3 to 6 years, there's going to be a real panic because there's not going to be enough food. And right now, he says there's too much food produced. And certainly, that's true as far as the dairy industry is concerned. There's huge stockpiles of butter and cheese. And, subsidies that are provided for this industry is not very good. And then Dr. Carpenter tells us that if you eat a meal that contains these dioxins in the animal fat, if you eat a meal like that, it will stay in your body for a long, long time, and you'll be able to eliminate maybe a half of it in 7 years. So this is a great source of accumulating these carcinogens by eating this meat from animals that are in turn fed rendered fats from other animals. That's an agricultural process, an agricultural way of doing business that should be stopped. Absolutely.
Well, and Don, I know that you and I have talked on different issues ever since I've been in office, and I know you're passionate and you're probably way ahead of the curve on a lot of issues, but I do feel, I can tell you in other areas, it's taken decades for legislation to catch up with in certain areas for a lot of different reasons. I mean, a lot of times you're right. It's the political interests that hold things at bay. And I'm talking not specifically to the issues that you're talking about today, but I'm just talking about the process in Albany. But I have to say, over the last 5 or 6 years, there has been a shift, for more people looking at the food, the whole homegrown, the whole local, everything from ag and markets to even the Department of Health and the smoking debate and the discussion, there has been some progress made in certain areas. It's not enough. And sometimes the agencies, when they feel that an issue is too political to push through the legislature, have tried to circumvent that and do it by regulation. So I would like to know what you feel that I can do. A piece of legislation is not, number one, it's not going to go through this year. I mean, nothing's going to happen this year. The focus is on it's very much budgetary, and you know the political dynamic right now. So even if we go back, it's going to be unfinished business. So if I were to set up a kind of a game plan or work this in a different direction, how do you feel I could be helpful to you? Because when I look at some of the key areas that you feel that could lower dioxin levels, I think there's been work done in those areas, maybe not by the Department of Health, but I do know that there definitely seems to be growing discussion. Now, whether discussion is enough at the state level, and then how do you translate that type of education to make sure people here in the North Country are fully understanding the environmental risks or understanding enough so that they can make, educated choices might change their behaviors. And it comes back to what Michelle made. We live in an area that economics drives choice sometimes. So, I mean, I'm open to your ideas.
Okay.
I don't think legislation. We did talk to Bill Drafting, or Judy did, and she's not in today. Otherwise, I'd put her on the phone to share kind of what the feeling was about legislation. You saw just with open the burning ban.
Never went anywhere. And it was. It was because of the Farm Bureau opposing a ban, any change. They said they didn't. They would never say they opposed a ban. They said they didn't want any changes in the way solid waste was regulated, especially with regards to the opportunities that, you know, farmers have for disposal, which meant they were opposed to a ban on open waste burning. And I was always so shocked by that the farmers were so lacking in science that they would actually advocate for continuing a practice that was poisoning the very food that they produced. That was very shocking to me. And I was also shocked that even there were people in the breast cancer groups, the breast cancer advocacy, you know, environmental groups. Well, they're not environmental groups. They were health groups.
Mm-hmm.
There were these breast cancer, you know, support, education, prevention.
Susan Coleman,
group.
Or were they involved?
Well, not them. It was this one in particular was the one that was done in Ithaca, and it doesn't even exist any longer. They changed names and they changed people. But even as short a time ago as in the mid-2000s, you know, well before the ban on open burning was enacted by D.C., there were people down there that would actually say, well, but the farmers, they have a legitimate issue here. And I could never understand that people that were concerned about cancer and the public, that they would feel somehow, you know, kind of less than, you know, strongly opposed to the farmers advocating for continuing to be able to dispose of their trash in the air like that and thereby contaminate the food supply with these chemicals. So there's a huge amount of need for people to just kind of like wake up and realize that sometimes we have to take these steps that are a bump in the road for one particular part of the economy or another in order to use science to prevent disease. Because in the end, that is superior to any other choices, because in the end, the costs that we will avoid by not having to treat these horrible chronic diseases and lose all this productivity, cause all this pain and suffering amongst the public, in the end, that will so vastly outweigh the short-term savings of one particular part of the economy. Say, like, for example, with the trash, you know, disposal. The farmers avoiding that cost of taking the trash to a landfill rather than just burning it on the farm, that is such a small cost compared to the cost that is imposed by treating all the diseases that are caused by the dioxin exposure. And there's no comparison in the true big picture economics of it. And to get back to what you could potentially do, here's what it is. If you would talk to the people in your State Department of Health, I remember years ago when Jim Wright, Senator Wright, he organized a sit-down meeting in Watertown at his office where there were people from Ag and Markets, there were people from DEC, and these were top people. It was Bob Moreland. He was then the director of the Division of Air Resources with New York State DEC. We all came together. There was people from, I think, might even been before Cancer Action existed. I think it was. It was back when we were not called Cancer Action. It was St. Lawrence Environmental Action at that time. It was in the late 90s. And so we had this sit-down meeting with Senator Wright and his staff and the state, you know, regulatory department, DEC, and Ag and Markets. There was no one from DOH there. I did not believe there was. And we talked about how to bring an end to the open waste burning. And that was very productive. It moved things along. There was a huge change that eventually occurred because Mr. Warland, at that time, he said, we don't know if we really want the state to pass a law banning the trash burning, because right now we do not have enough environmental conservation officers and environmental police officers to enforce a law like that. But then in having gone through that, you know, that meeting there and the years passing by, eventually, like you say, DEC decided that the legislature was not going to be able to solve this problem. So they, in 2009, you know, last year, they passed their ban, and that's going very well. I'm just saying, if you could get the New York State Department of Health to just have a conference call, they don't even have to go anywhere and sit down at a table. These conference calls work very well. We're finding them very productive. if you could motivate them, say someone from the Center for Environmental Health with a scientific expertise, like this Dr. Johnson, Dr. Thomas Johnson, he knows dioxin and cancer to a degree. If he were willing to have a conference call with us where we could discuss these matters, and especially if you were on the call, you know, say if it was you and Dr. Johnson from DOH and maybe someone from the Division of Air Resources with DEC. And see, Michelle, she has been bringing in this whole other part. See, what we're encountering, Dee Dee, is that this has been let go for so long. The science has accumulated for so long. There are messages, you know, on many matters, you know, not just the dioxins in the food supply. And then it's not just the dioxins in the food supply. It's these persistent organic pollutants like PBDEs and PCBs and pesticides. So and it's not just that. It's this water thing. See, this is not, you know, now we're not talking about food. We're talking about water. And Michelle has just opened our eyes so much, my eyes so much, to this problem of people burying trash everywhere and anywhere and either dumping it on top of the ground or burying it. It's all the same. If it's on the ground and in the rain, it's in the water, in the groundwater, in the wells, in the streams. And that is so horrible.
Michelle, can I just ask you a pointed question? And it's not meant to be offensive, so I hope you don't take it. When did you become, I guess, interested in these factors? Have you always been interested, or did you become more so?
When I was diagnosed with cancer and when I talked to my oncologist about, because I was stage 3 when I was diagnosed, and, you know, I was, of course, when they said cancer, I was just totally stunned and scared to death, and I talked to my oncologist, Dr. Alston, and she said, you know, Michelle, she said, you are one of so many people that have asked me, what did I do wrong? You know, how could I have possibly gotten cancer?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, your type is, you know, a rare type. I've never treated it here. And they wanted to send me to Boston or to Roswell. And I said, I have no family there. I said, you have to do something. I cannot leave the area. I'm scared. I don't want to leave the area. So she found a solution for me by going with their protocol, basically, as how to treat me. Here. My cancer was of the anal canal, and it traveled pretty quickly to lymph nodes 5 inches up from the tumor. Dr. Yeddo also was a lifesaver for me. But when she told me about this, you know, burying of garbage and the pesticides and things like that, and she did her own research into this, that's what really got me motivated to take a real good look around. And so she told me there was hot spots in this Morristown area. So I did my own door-to-door research, and in one little area of the DeMott, Gilmore, English Settlement, and Middle Road, and there was 33 people in just that little clustered area that have succumbed to cancer.
Mm.
And that's a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw what goes on up in Briar Hill, where this gentleman that rents these properties buries, if somebody moves out, whatever's in that house, and they don't come for it, he buries it in the dooryards. And I saw this. There was one house that was 15 feet deep. 5 feet away, there was the well casing. And I was so stunned. I was just so stunned. I saw paint cans. I saw pesticide, spray cans. I saw all kinds of household garbage, plastic and detergent bottles and bicycles and car batteries. And I just couldn't believe it, and so I contacted the DEC, and I said, you know, how can that be right for these people to be able to do that? And I was told by Mike Shannery here in Region 6 that there's no law saying that they can't.
My point for asking that was just that's what triggered you to want to become more educated in your
mm-hmm.
environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I sometimes to figure out, okay, what triggers
what my motive is, yeah.
Right. And it's not a motive, because a motive sometimes sounds like, oh, you know.
Yeah, I know.
It's a bad thing. But how can you take that message and make people really listen that are not facing, you know, a life-threatening disease? And
I think that's
what we're talking about here.
Right.
How do you educate? And you change behavior. I think you can always try to change behavior legislatively.
Right.
It's very
right.
difficult to do it. Or you can change behavior because people all of a sudden realize, you know, they've got choices to make.
Well, I think one, like Don and I talked about, is the DEC needs to change this law about this illegal burying of debris. You know, that needs to change. And even like Sherry said, it's wrong. He doesn't agree with it either, but, you know, when I talked to the head guys there in Waterfront,
is it legal to do that?
Yeah.
Or are they, do
it's
they just
illegal.
Do it and not get caught?
No, it's
I mean,
legal.
Is
it's
it
legal.
Poor enforcement? It's legal.
It's legal.
It's legal.
Okay.
As far as, see, what is, here's the way it stands right now in New York State. There is no prohibition whatsoever. You, if trash is generated on a residential property, that trash can be buried, dumped, you know, leave it laying on top of the ground or buried in the ground, and that is legal. If a commercial entity has trash, that it's not legal to dump it or bury it or burn it. That's all illegal. And then
so no one, even something that is, I mean, laden with asbestos, I mean, no one has, it just all goes
that
in the ground.
That is not illegal. That is
right.
Not illegal if it was generated on that residence. Somebody cannot bring in, say like somebody is operating a landfill. You know, you cannot do that. That's illegal. If a person has their own property or they're renting property or whatever, and then they are trying to get other people to bring their trash there and dump it or bury it there, that is illegal right now. That's
mm-hmm.
unquestionably illegal. It is illegal for businesses, commercial entities, to, you know, like as I said, to dump or bury. But see, then there's this distinction made between agriculture and commercial, which is not reasonable in this day and age. And agriculture is a commercial in these days. But it is legal right now for farmers to take the commercial quantity, you know, and the commercial nature of waste that they have on their farm and bury that on their farm or dump it on their farm. That is legal. You know, it's generated on their farm. There's no prohibition against farms dumping or burying solid waste in New York State. And like I said, there's no prohibition against residences. So if you take all the farms and all the rural residences and look at how, you know, they stand perfectly free to dispose of their solid waste this way, it's a big problem. It's a huge amount of solid waste in a lot of land, in a lot of wells, and a lot of, you know, people exposed to the, you know, the chemicals. See, those chemicals, they do not stay in that solid waste.
And Dale, you know, we're talking about what can we do to get people's attention, and Dale just gave me an article that appeared yesterday. You probably saw it, or many of you probably saw it, in the Watertown Daily Times, in the A section on page 2.
Yeah, I don't get that paper.
Did you see it?
I don't get the paper.
What was it in regard to?
Cancer is the world's costliest disease.
Yeah.
Cancer is the world's top economic
mm-hmm.
killer, as
mm-hmm.
well as its
mm-hmm.
likely leading cause of death. They say... economic toll in 2008, $895 billion.
Right.
Equivalent to 1.5% of the world's gross domestic product.
Mm-hmm. I read that.
What is the point? What is really the point in the Watertown Daily Times publishing something like that? Because it's just like all that does is kind of make people feel like, oh, wow, I've had enough of hearing about cancer today, you know. And see, there's no true, I don't see any true public educational value in that. Because it just kind of like shocks people, and they quickly get over it, and it also just kind of like gets them filled up. They don't want to hear any more about cancer then for the rest of the week
or
whatever.
You know, too.
And they need so much to know these specific details of what causes cancer. Like Michelle said, they want to know, the poor people that get it want to know what caused it.
Well, I'll give you, for instance, I got a phone call maybe a month ago from a Sergeant Kevin Fee from Ogdensburg. And he was diagnosed with terminal small cell lung cancer. And it had already spread to his bone and to his liver. And he was hysterically crying on the phone. And he asked me, Michelle, what did I do? You know, I never smoked. I ate healthy, or at least I thought I did. I was never a drinker. I ran 5 to 7 miles a day. You know, and here I am. I am terminally ill. And, you know, he was very, very emotional, and he asked me about these pollutants here
mm-hmm.
because his doctor, which is the same doctor I have, has been talking about it. And I said, well, you know, it's hard to talk to a man you know nothing's going to, what do you say? You know, I was really flabbergasted that he even called me, but I think, well, he told me somebody at the cancer center suggested he call me for basically support. And but his question was, you know, what can we do? I probably won't be here to see it, but I have children here. I have a wife here that I'm going to leave behind, and there's nothing I can do to make any change because I'm going to succumb to this. And it was a sad, sad conversation.
Well, if the one thing, and one thing that might be helpful is to try to set up a telephone conference with someone from the Center for Environmental Health and Department of Health, I will try to facilitate that.
That'd be wonderful.
Okay, yep. That would be.
But, you know, I understand what you're saying, Don, about the Watertown Daily Times, but you've got to get something that's going to get people's attention. And if it's the cost of it, if it's $895 billion, you know, people don't think of it in terms of the money value. The moneyed interests get involved, but there's also a monetary cost to it. You know, you understand what I'm saying? And
yep.
You've got to have
mm-hmm.
something that gets people's attention right now.
I will say it got mine.
Oh, yeah. It got yours because it was it was a personal, you know, it was a personal
right.
challenge and a personal experience.
Right.
But outside of that, in order to be helpful and educational and preventive, and you see that in healthcare today, there's much more, there's a lot more emphasis on treating the disease versus
right.
the prevention component
exactly.
of it.
You're right, exactly. That's what we're trying to change.
That's right.
Bit, you know?
That's right.
And that we're trying to do it in the right way and in a subtle way. And that's why we were asking for your help. And how, you know, you set a conference call, and that would be great if you could facilitate that.
I will attempt to do that. I will try to do that.
Well, we really appreciate that. And I'm thinking that we'll likely produce some quick, you know, progress, because we had a really good call. The call that we had with Dr. Hathaway with the St. Lawrence County Public Health Department and John Montan with the Planning Office and Brent Buchanan with the Corporate Extension and Michelle and Lou and I, that was, you know, that was productive. We, just in talking about the matters, it came clear where the different parties stood and, you know, what changes need to take place. And see, I left out the most important person, this Dr. David Carpenter. See, we would want him to be on that call too, Dee Dee, because he is so expert in these matters, and he has the credentials. He's an MD. He's a Harvard Medical School graduate. He's worked for the state his whole career, pretty much. He's now the director of the SUNY Albany Institute for Health and Environment. He is very interested in this matter of the dioxins in the food supply. He is a strong advocate for bringing that animal feeding practice to an end where the waste animal fat is fed to the food animals. So for him to be on a call with us and the New York State Department of Health scientist talking about dioxin and cancer and these other persistent organic pollutants and cancer, I think we can make some huge progress.
Okay. I will attempt to facilitate that. I can't promise anything with Dr. Carpenter.
Well, he will. He'll do it on our end. We'll get him on there from our end, you know.
Okay.
All we need you guys to do is to get the Department of Health to come to the call.
I will attempt to do that.
Well, that's
wonderful, Dee Dee.
You know,
and
yeah,
the other thing, just a suggestion, since you've already ongoing discussions with the county. The other thing, if you can move some agricultural producers to make changes voluntarily,
yep.
You might want to get out attaboys to them, you know. So-and-so has made this change, you know, thank you very much, you know, here's what it's doing. I know that the tobacco cessation and the tobacco prevention and control groups, they tried to work very proactively with hospitals and with the school districts and just trying to change behavior. And I know they had financial resources that allowed them to try to do that. But
well, we're really pleased with the truth of it is, the thing that I have felt the most inclined to honor, you know, of what's all been going on up here in New York State, truly not just the northern part, but all over New York State as far as what I know about, is how these town boards have been willing to come out with these resolutions expressing their support for this education we're talking about, this education on the presence of these carcinogenic pups in the food supply and these various measures to decrease exposure, you know, whether it involves, you know, banning that animal fat feeding and also to involve this reducing consumption while the chemicals exist in the food. And these are farmers. This is like Jim Armstrong, supervisor of the Lisbon Town Board, Nate Putney, they're a new young farmer on the Lisbon Town Board. There were, you know, farmers on the Canton Town Board. Well, I take that back. I don't know if there were any farmers on the Canton Town Board, but they certainly represent many farmers in the township of Canton. So to see that the town of Canton and the town of Lisbon, you know, two very, very big dairy production townships in St. Lawrence County and in New York State, that those town boards were willing to say this education needs to be done because this is the science that will prevent cancer. I just want to say honor to you, that Canton Town Board and that Lisbon Town Board.
Yeah. Well, and that's the way you start to make progress, and you are making progress. And I saw it with tobacco prevention. Bit by bit, they had the financial resources to do that. So, but I will try to get this facilitated for you and be back to you. I can't give you a time frame, but I'll make a call to the Department of Health and see what we can put together.
Well, thank you very much, Dee Dee.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dee Dee.
It was nice speaking with you, Michelle and Lou.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I wish you were running. I wish you were running for the assembly this year, you know.
No, I'm not. Taking a little break, Don.
Yeah, well, that, you know, that makes sense, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
You've done a lot
maybe
of good
work. Maybe I'll run
there.
For Senate.
All right. We'll talk to you again, Dee.
Okay. Bye. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye now.